Hello again, and welcome back to another fun-filled episode of Monday Night Magic here on the MTG Cast Network. This is, as was changed just a second ago in the show notes, Monday Night Magic number 533 here on the MTG. I did that last week.
On the internet.
Yay! We are just up from the internet.
We are.
So, I am Chewy, already failing miserably.
Noun and adjective.
Whatever Bill just said. Failing miserably at keeping us on track. I am joined, as almost always, by Clues and Squee.
Yes, nearly sometimes.
Almost certainly, 60% of the time, it works some of the time.
Occasionally, now and then.
Yes.
Periodically.
Uptime may vary.
So, they're both sick. One
woo!
Physically.
And tired.
And tired. I'm also tired. So, to try to keep us awake, we have added in Chris Lansdell again.
See, when you're famous, you can basically do anything you want.
Yes. So, are you saying that you could go out into the crowd and shoot someone and not lose any podcast listeners?
Yeah, I don't think that's the reference he was going for.
No. I could grab them by the wildlicado.
Wow. Okay then. So,
and that's the show, everybody. Yeah,
we were going to tell you about the Pro Tour, but Chris messed it up for everybody.
Chris Lansdell. Why we can't have nice things.
That's true. One of these days.
Yeah, probably not. So, by the way, Chris writes for Star City Games, and he has a podcast called what?
Tapping Out.
And it's where?
CardConfidants.com.
Yay.
Look at the plugs.
Speaking of which, I should plug in my iPad. I will do that now. So, yes, the Pro Tour.
Did you ever get that screen repaired?
No, I don't have any damn money.
Well, I didn't know if it was still under warranty.
I never actually finished digging through boxes for the box.
Box of ass.
You should get a box of boxes.
I have that. Anyway, so the Pro Tour happened. Pro Tour Kaladesh in Honolulu.
Allegedly.
No, it happened.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There are witnesses.
There are, yeah.
They're still playing the final game.
Close, but not quite. As you may know by now, Hall of Famer Shota Yasuoka won the whole thing.
And he earned it.
Yeah, he did. Well, I mean, he only had to play two matches on Sunday, but we'll get into that in a minute. Or right now, because this was... Did they do this?
Violent Strongcation.
Did they do this with Eldritch Moon, or were they just talking about it for Pro Tour Eldritch Moon? I can't remember.
They were just talking
about it. I thought they actually... No, I thought they'd done it, huh?
This is the debut.
Okay. So this is the new anti-concession tech of the weird-looking bracket, where the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th seeds have to play each other in quarterfinal stage 1. The winner of those two games goes on to play the 3rd and 4th seed in quarterfinal stage 2. And then the winner of those quarterfinals go on to play the semis with the 1st and 2nd seed. So there's a really huge incentive to not concede or draw into the top 8 because you want your seed to be as high as possible so you can play less games. Because if you play less games, then you have less chance to screw it all up.
I hear playing fewer games and having to win fewer games is a good thing.
That's why I don't play.
I mean, that's what I hear.
So can we take a minute to discuss this new policy and our feelings on it?
Sure.
I sense that, Clues, you have some rather strong feelings that you are about to express.
I have some reservation. Well, I was letting the silence gather.
It's gone now.
Yeah, the truncation just kicks that right in the head.
Oh.
But as soon as you turn away from them, you'll forget you saw them.
I don't have...
That was a Doctor Who reference.
Yeah, I know what it was.
Yeah, we know. Yeah, I don't even watch Doctor Who, and I knew that.
And now all I can think of is that there's probably one standing behind me. Thank you, Chris Lansdell. I kind of hate you.
Oh, it's not just one, buddy.
Yeah, well, yeah. It would explain
Bring
all
Maggot.
The parks. No. Right now we're discussing my not seriously strong feelings, just some mild reservations about this. So I like that they're trying something to reduce concessions, because I do agree with their philosophy on that. What feels kind of weird about it is, hey, congratulations on making it to the top eight. Now fight for our amusement while we sit over here and just wait, because we don't have to play any more games. Ha ha, ha 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 ha. Because we're ranked higher than you. It feels a little, I don't know, it feels a little off in that respect. Now, if you've got a top eight where, you know, your cut is clean, and let's say all eight players have a slightly different number of points, great. But when the actual layout of your top eight is decided on tiebreakers, then it just feels like, oh man, you got screwed. You fought through all of that on the previous day and or days, depending on your particular event. And just because your first tiebreaker is, you know, 0.12 lower than that guy's, yeah, you're now in fifth, not fourth, so you get to play an extra game. And by get to, I mean have to.
You can also look at it from, hey, because my tiebreaker is 0.12 higher than that guy's, I'm fourth, not fifth. Like, it works both ways.
Well, I see that as the same way, honestly. Either way, one guy, you know, got screwed on the tiebreakers, and one guy
did
not.
Is that different from people who come in ninth versus eighth?
Yeah, exactly.
No.
That was my next point.
Not at all. This is actually was going to be a broader discussion about non-clean breaks for top eight and how tiebreakers are such a horrible way to do things. Not that I have a better way, because I certainly don't. Except to make events smaller, I guess. I don't know. Let's run simultaneous parallel events. Let's do that.
Well, what you could
all
do,
events
I guess,
are now split,
is take everybody with the same points total and say, okay, you made the top X, so it's top eight, and everyone tied with eighth on points, and then the people who are tied face off until there's only eight people left, and then you do a straight bracket. That's really
not
the only
number.
Way. Well, you'd have to do a round robin, I guess, but that's the only way you would ever eliminate the missing out on breakers thing. And even then, seeding is still going to be decided by breakers. I don't think there's any way you can get around that. I
had some concerns.
A top eight with eight different records in it. I don't think I've ever seen that.
No, I don't think I have either.
I don't know if it's possible in a 16-round tournament. But I'm not a number scientist. I think Wizards tried a few things with the Pro Tour to avoid concessions in matches that people would really rather see, and IDs for that matter. And I think one of the things that they did in Sydney that they absolutely discontinued right away was the pairing people by incentive.
Yeah, which we talked about last week. They tried. It got a lot of negative feedback. And so they're like, well, we're done with that now.
It also doesn't work at the first Pro Tour of the season because everyone has the same incentive.
There is also that.
Like, I'm playing to win the Pro Tour. Me too. I'm playing to be captain of my World Cup team. You know there's three other Pro Tours and 45 GP still, right? Shut up! I am from Cyprus. Nobody else from my country is qualifying for a Pro Tour, ever.
Well, there goes our Cyprus listeners.
That seemed.
I thought I was the one who made fun of arbitrary places.
Well, you're not feeling well, so.
That's fair. Delegation.
He's picking up the slack.
That's fair. Yeah, as far as this thing's concerned, I think if the two options that we see on the table right now are what they've just done with the multi-level splitting at the end so that there's an incentive to try to actually go in with a higher place versus a be-all and end-all cut off of top eight like we've done previously and like we do at smaller events, I think the newer one makes more sense. I also think that it's unfortunate that for people who come in eighth, they have a vastly harder time than people who come in second when there is so little that determines the difference between them. But if we're going to acknowledge that it's not just a threshold so much as it's actually scoring, that's the only way I think you can do it. I mean, it's not like you can start the last game with two more life or something. Like, that's not going to happen. So I don't really know an alternative. But that's what they do in larger sporting events when things don't just break down into a convenient arrangement anyway. You sort of get like home team advantage if you come in higher. I mean, the bigger problem in all of it is just the fact that Magic the Gathering operates on a scoring system because we need it to happen in tournaments when that's really the best we've got, but it's not a good system to have in general. for gauging success. And because so much of it has to be determined on that scale by things that are out of your control, it's kind of moot.
Right.
You're essentially getting your top eight by because you played really, really well and other things lined up, which is cool. And that's what we got.
The difference with a GP and a Pro Tour is that at a GP, you get your buys at the front end. And a Pro Tour, if you need to win a whole bunch to even have a chance of getting a buy. So, I don't know, I hear your concern, and it's possible they just go back to a straight top eight, but this method...
No, I think this is better than a straight top eight, honestly. I mean,
I like it a lot.
Even though it does create this, for lack of a better phrase, unlevel playing field. I know there's a better phrase for that, but I'm too tired to think of it, so... But I think it is better than a straight top eight because you will just have the draws.
The thing
and
that you're calling a drawback is actually the feature that Wizards wanted. They want to reward the people who finish the Swiss at the top.
Well, it's a tool that they're using, and it's
much
the tool
like
we have
Chris Lansdale
with the system that we have.
So looking at the results for round 16, it looks like Li Shichen and Makis Matsoukas actually drew into the top eight, and Ben Hull and Shota drew into the top eight.
Yep.
But then Pierre Dagen and Matt Nass played it out.
And because of that, they both ended up with one bye in the top eight.
Yeah, they both ended up they were in the second round of quarters, right?
Yeah, but if Nass had won, he would have been top seed.
Yeah, and Dagen would have been out of the top eight, if I remember correctly.
Possibly. I misread.
I think that's what Rich Hagen was saying.
Okay.
Oh, so they played each other. You're not saying that they beat an opponent to make
No. They played each other in the final round as the third pairing.
Well, ain't that a thing.
There was a lot on the line with that, because if Matt Nass wins, then he gets to wait in the semifinals and hopefully face Matsoukas or Ben Hull, who don't have counterspells.
Right. And Pierre Dagen is most likely out.
Is most likely out, which means Reed Duke is probably in. Well, I think Reed Duke finished ninth.
I don't have that one open. Hang on.
Man, it is a meta game.
Yeah, it's...
Gamer's gonna game.
It changes completely the who finished ninth. Matteo
Morey.
Ninth. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he was on blue light.
It changes completely. Like, tournament math is still tournament math. It just changes what the EV is of any given result. So,
yeah,
I'm actually surprised that the top two pairings actually just drew in, since the the seed matters so much.
Well, if you look at the two people who did draw in, like, you had Ben Hull, who's never been, this was his first Pro Tour.
Yep.
And who was the other one? Li Shichen and Matsoukas, right?
And Matsoukas, and that was also his first Pro Tour.
Yeah, and I think he was locked number one overall anyway. So
oh, that's
was,
true. He was the number one seed, and he drew in.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the top eight, we should probably just tell people who was in the top eight, since we haven't actually done that.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, we're going to run through the deck list, so yeah, we might as well go ahead.
So the first seed after the Swiss was Makis Matsoukas from Greece, and he was on, I believe, red-white tokens.
Wait, let's not fool with seeding. Let's just go through the results now.
Okay.
The final standings. Yeah, we don't do the whole.
So yeah, Shota Yasuoka won, playing Grixis Control.
Did you hear his interview at the end?
No, because I got so sick of listening to Rich Hagen and BDM and Ian Duke tell me the same thing that they had told me 15 times all day that I turned it off.
So,
but he
BDM
did say, don't play this deck. This was for a Pro Tour.
Yeah, BDM said, what would you tell people who were going to play your deck at FNM? He said, don't play it. Flat out. Which is what I say every time he does well at a Pro Tour. When I write about his article, I say, when you want to play this at FNM, ask yourself one question. Are you Shota Yasuoka? If no, choose a different deck. He wins with, other people can't play.
Well, I mean, it's not just that. Like, I don't think that's why he was saying that.
No, he would never say that. He's too humble. He's one of the very few players on the Pro Tour that you will very rarely hear a bad word about. Let me start then.
You know what? He's too humble. Screw him. There. But
I think it might more be a matter of the deck was tuned for the metagame of the Pro Tour.
Yeah, the metagame of a Pro Tour and the metagame of everything else is drastically different. And he did it for that. specifically. So, but yeah, this deck is it's pretty nice. It's got four Thing in the Ice, which is completely ridiculous, and two Torrential Gear Hulk, which turns out to be the standout Gear Hulk of the weekend.
Yeah, it was definitely the breakout cards.
It's Snapcaster Titan.
Yeah, well, what is it people were calling? Fat Caster Mage?
That works too.
Yeah.
I was calling Goblin Dark Dwellers that, so what does that make this guy?
Better.
There's an argument for that. I don't know.
Snapcaster Mac.
The thing about this deck, Thing in the Ice was so key all throughout the tournament, because you don't want to play threats into it when it's already lost a couple of counters, because then he could just bounce your entire field and smack you for seven. But you kind of have to play threats into it, otherwise you just let him set up to the point where he can wipe your board and still has the Thing in the Ice. And then even if he has a Torrential Gear Hulk in play, oh no, I just bounced my 5-6 Snapcaster Mage.
Which actually happened in the... was it the finals? I think it was the finals.
It happened more than once in the top eight, for sure. But yeah, the deck is just so masterfully put together, and he played it so well. Just some of the lines he took and the plays he made. I'm specifically thinking of his play to win game one and game four? Or was it game... Whichever game he won by killing Romao's last threat, his last win condition.
That was... I think that was three.
And then the game he won with the unlicensed disintegration.
That was one, because I missed
it. Yeah, where the three damage.
He set up a way to win in three different paths so that there was no way out.
Yeah, even though he was playing around a counterspell, knowing that Romao could counter it, but he would die anyway. It was just, oh, so good.
All right, it was the kind of thing that you think about when you're imagining... like the masterful chess play, where the goal isn't to set up a piece in a position to win, but to actually get your opponent in check, where they have two or three options and all of them result in them losing. And that's pretty much what he did. And it was really impressive to watch.
Yeah, if you can handle, dear listeners, if you can handle a deeply strategic game where it looks like not much is happening, but in reality all kinds of things are happening... as far as sculpting what's in your hand and counting the number of things your opponent has done and counting the number of cards left in libraries and
drawing out answers
and planning, you know, 5 and 6 turns ahead, you should totally watch the finals because it was brilliant. Now, if you like to see creatures slamming into each other, you should probably just skip the finals. It's not for you.
But I will say... that for a control mirror, these players played really fast.
Right?
I really appreciate that, and that's another reason why you shouldn't take this deck to FNM if you're not ready. You need to be able to make quick decisions, or you're just going to go to time every game and everyone will hate you.
There is that. So looking at the rest of the deck, he's got Radiant Flames as sweeper, Painful Truths for card draw, and Transgress the Mind, just one. Clues, don't mouse over that.
I'm not. Don't worry.
Good. For a little bit of disruption. He's got Unlicensed Disintegration because, you know, kill a thing. Harness Lightning because kill a thing. And then Void Shatter, Ceremonious Rejection, Negate, and, that's it in the main for counterspells. A full set of Galvanic Bombardment because kill things.
Kill a thing.
One Essence Extraction, which is just funny. And then three Anticipate and two Glimmer of Genius. Because control, so draw the cards. Did I mention there's a Jace Unraveler of Secrets in there, too? Yeah, because there is.
So the reason for the one-off instance and things that might look weird is that Torrential Gear Hulk is there. And Essence Extraction, that three life is not insignificant sometimes.
Very true.
Also, I think we might, by the end of this format, we might end up hating Harness Lightning.
I'm pretty sure some people already do.
Don't think so. Nope.
Because the fact that you can play it with things like Aether Hub and Glimmer of Genius and other cards that give you energy but don't actually require you to spend it makes
You're right. I love Super Bowl.
It makes it really easy to kill huge creatures with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did see it several points in the top eight, which is the only part of the tournament that I actually was able to watch. Just Harness Lightning... and just roll this massive D12 over here on an energy counter on camera. Just roll it down to kill anything. Just whatever you played, I'll just roll this down. How big is that Gear Hulk? Oh, it's a 5/6 harness lightning. It's dead. Like, buh.
Yeah.
Welcome to the energy mechanic, everyone.
Yeah.
Kill it with lightning, ?
Yeah.
Yeah, this deck was sweet. The sideboard was also sweet. The confiscation coup. Woo.
Woo. I never actually saw him cast a confiscation coup, I only watched top 8.
Weaver of Lightning is sweet. It blocks Smuggler's Copter all day and kills all the one toughness guys in red-white vehicles.
Yep.
And To the Slaughter, I saw that cast with Delirium at least twice.
Yeah, that's what sealed up the last game, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just kill sack one of your creatures and your Dovenbahn, and yeah, I'm going to win this game.
Every time somebody says the name Dovenbahn, I want to say Dovenbasal, but that's because I read the Extended Universe novels. Poor Chewie. He got crushed by a moon. Spoilers.
Anyway. It didn't happen anymore.
Yeah, that definitely didn't happen anymore.
So, this actually reminds me.
Fan fiction. Go ahead.
This actually reminds me. So, one of the things to note, and again, they've been doing it for a little bit now, but like the first two games are played pre-sideboarding.
Yeah, yes. in the top 8.
Right, in the top
5, and the first two are pre-sideboard. Yes.
Right. And the reason I bring that up is because that means that you have these control matches where typically the first game is like, okay, well, that's happened. And then you get into like the back and forth control ninja fight where you swap in like all your counter spells and you have to fight it out like that. But because of that here, you had two pre-board control mirror games. And it showed because they had all these cards that were like, all right, I'll kill that. Oh, huh. Well, I guess I'll just discard it at the end of turn because there weren't things to kill.
Yeah. I understand why it was done, and it makes sense because aggro decks basically were not doing very well. And then, oh, look, Rana Red deck started winning the Pro Tour. But in this case, with a control mirror, it did make for some rather awkward moments. People sitting there with galvanic bombardments in their hand and nothing to target with them.
Yeah, there were several points where you would draw for the turn, not have a land to play, look at the 8 cards in their hand, discard Galvanic Bombardment. Now that's hilarious against any other deck, where, hey, now the next Galvanic Bombardment is that much better. But against this deck, it was like, well, balls. So let's talk about the second place deck, since we keep talking about the control mirror. Carlos Ramau, who has been on a serious tear lately.
Oh, just a little bit.
Good lord. Hasn't he won 2 Grand Prix in the last, what,
2 back-to-back GPs.
Oh, they were back-to-back, weren't they? Excuse me.
Sao Paulo and Atlanta.
Atlanta, right.
He almost got the hat trick.
Yeah. I mean, this wasn't a GP, so he can still get it.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
I mean, I think he'd rather have the Pro Tour.
Well, probably, yeah. But he was...
10,000? 50,000?
He was...
I just like to think that if you get 3 in a row, they actually go, he's on fire!
That is actually... I was talking to my buddy Billy from It Might Be Gaming. During the Pro Tour, he's like, I'm pulling for the Brazilian. I was like, why? He's like, because I'm pretty sure if he wins, then the NBA Jam announcer comes out and yells he's on fire. And I was like...
Whoa. Well, after he won Atlanta, I did hear somebody say, he's heating up!
Wow. So yeah, he was playing Jeskai Control. He's also the world champ from 2002, by the way, as we remember.
Yeah, throwing that out there.
Yeah. But he's playing Jeskai Control with such things as Dovenbahn and Archangel Avacyn.
Yeah.
And 3 Torrential Gear Hulk, which it's important that there's an extra one there. He also had Fumigate and Radiant Flames for sweepers, and Quarantine Field and Stasis Snare.
Quarantine Field is such an underrated card.
Yes. It's also massively expensive, so there's just the one. But still, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there's an Archangel Avacyn in the deck instead of a multitude of other creatures you can play in a control deck like this. I guess the fact that it has Flash is the most important point.
Almost certainly, that's the most important part. Like, it's gotta be, right? I mean, it's a 4/4 with Flying and Vigilance, which you used to have to pay 5 every turn to get, because it was a land. Right? Yeah. Didn't that cost 5 to turn on?
Yes. What was it called? Celestial Colonnade.
There we go. Celestial Colonnade. Yeah. But now you just get that with a down payment of 5 mana, and it's just there forever until they kill it.
Well, to be fair, it is legendary, which does kind of reduce the cost somewhat.
Just a little bit. And, I mean, there are neat tricks where you can actually... I saw him actually kill it so that it... Or, no, he actually killed something else himself so that it would flip and be a 6-5 and be able to punch through.
Yeah.
And that's... It was just insane. But he's also running, let's see here, counter spells. He's got Summary Dismissal in the main. He's got Void Shatter. And I guess that's it. Huh. Neat. For removal, he's got Harness Lightning. Get used to hearing that. And Immolating Glare. And Blessed Alliance also counts. Sort of.
Yep.
And then he's got Anticipate and a full set of Glimmer of Genius.
The sideboard has 9 additional counter spells, if you consider Spell Queller a counter spell.
Which you should, because it is. Yeah, it's got 3 Spell Quellers, 3 Negates, and 3 Ceremonious Rejection. Just bam, bam, bam.
So, Clues, how do you feel about all these blue decks?
I'd rather not say.
There is no swearing on Monday Night Magic.
That is absolutely correct. Hey, look, the metagame in a Pro Tour, and we already said this earlier, is so weird and wonky and so specific that I'm unsurprised that there's a shocking amount of control that made it here. But that doesn't mean that I have to enjoy it. The good news for me in the good news, bad news category is I'm very unlikely to ever play in the top 8 of a Pro Tour.
That is true.
You're more likely to judge the top 8 of a Pro Tour.
Yep, and even that's pretty unlikely.
And for those of you at home who are planning going to game day, this is an excellent time to get a really fast, aggressive deck as all these people stumble through these control decks next weekend.
Yep.
And also, I wouldn't say there's a shocking amount of control. There were 2 in the top 8.
Well, yep, that's shocking.
In the top
2 and a half.
But later on, we'll look at the top point-getting decks, I'm sure, and 4 of the top decks were blue-white control.
That is true.
I'd like to point out, while we're on Carlos' deck over here, that in the second game of the finals, he resolves Dovin Bond and actually makes it to an emblem, and it does not matter.
Nope.
Because when you're playing Control Mirror and both people have, 12, 14 lands out, you can actually play around that drawback pretty easily.
Yeah.
The emblem, for context, is your opponents can't untap more than 2 permanents during their untap step. And, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. So, that's the Jeskai control version, which is probably better suited just a little bit for the aggro decks in the field, because it's got the 5 main deck sweepers in Avacyn, Dovin Bond that locks creatures down. It's just probably... Oh, and the Immolating Glare, of course. It's just slightly better suited for the all the aggro decks, I think.
It's better at shifting gears and attacking if it needs to, because...
It's also better at shifting gear hulks.
Yeah. Because it's got the 4 Fumeral, and it doesn't have the waiting to come online thing in the ice that the other deck has. It can just sort of start. Like, having Avacyn there really helps for punching, and it depends on your style, but I think that this one's probably a little easier to run with as well.
Yeah, and given that Shota is just known as a heavy control player, yeah, his deck is probably better suited to his style, because it's very slow and grindy. But
Carlos, yeah, I would not...
Go ahead.
I wouldn't want to try to play Shota's deck if I wasn't really, really good at it, because I do feel like you would just go to time a lot. Like, they were playing ridiculously fast and no time limit Magic. And if you're not quick enough at assessing what you need to do and planning ahead, you're going to have a lot of choices to make. And even if you're making the right choices, it might take a little bit longer. So you need a bit of practice.
True. It's also worth pointing out that Shota made it. He got the 2 buys and made it all the way to the semis based on the seeding. Carlos had to play from stage 1 of the quarterfinals. He made it to the finals on hard mode. For Sunday. He played quarters 1, quarters 2, semis, and just won all of those.
Yeah, so, he's pretty good at this Magic the Gathering thing.
Yeah, so damn. So who's... Oh.
Makis Matsoukas, third place.
Yes, and he was, again, this is his first Pro Tour. Not his first Pro Tour top, well, it was his first Pro Tour top eight. This was his first Pro Tour.
Is that good, or?
That seems good, yeah, to end up in top seed going into the top eight and finish third. Yeah, I think that's pretty good.
This seems like a deck Clues might enjoy a little more.
A little Possibly. Bit, yeah. He's running.
It has goblins in it.
He's running his own deck. Like, this is a deck he had been working on since, I guess, the set came out, I think is what they said.
Yep.
It's red-white tokens.
It's the only one in day two, by the way.
Well, there you go. And it's neat. He's running two Gideons, because, duh. He's got, let's see here, let's jump around a bit. He's got one Harness Lightning in the main, four copies of Outnumber.
I like it.
Yeah, I'll give you guys a second out there listening to go look up what Outnumber is. Okay, time's up. For a single red, it deals damage to target creature equal to the number of creatures you control. So you can tell he's planning on, like, outnumbering, ba-dum-bum, his opponent. He's got four Declaration in Stone, because that card is insane. And he's got four Servo Exhibition, which is neat.
Yeah.
Servo Exhibition does many things. It gives you 2/1s that can, let's say, drive a Smuggler's Copter. Or, let's say, turn on a Toolcraft Exemplar or Inventor's Apprentice. These are all things that it does.
The best part is when he said, everyone into the minivan.
That was pretty funny. So, yeah, he's running...
Oh, wait, that wasn't him.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that was Ben Hull, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Whoops. Wrong guy in the top eight for his first Pro Tour ever. Whoops. But, yeah, he's running Toolcraft Exemplar, Inventor's Apprentice, Thraben Inspector, Reckless Bushwhacker, go Clues, and PNLR.
I like it.
And four Smuggler's Copters. So... It's essentially drop a one drop that does a thing, play a Servo Exhibition to turn on said one drop, like I said, and then punch in the face, and also fly copters.
Did you mention punching in the face?
There's the face punching, yes.
Right, so much like Boros, where the emblem is a fist, there's a lot of punching in the face with fists.
A little bit, yeah.
I like this deck a lot. It feels like it's missing a card. And I wrote about this in my article, which you can all see on Wednesday on starcitygames.com.
Nice.
I wish Angel of Invention were playable in this deck, but with 22 lands, a 5-drop is probably asking a little much.
Yeah, just a bit, yeah.
But maybe like a Glitzleeve Artisan, just as another way to get two bodies from one card, and also give you the option of going a little bigger if you need to.
Hmm. Yeah, he was seriously weak to sweepers.
Radiant Flames.
Yeah. Like, Radiant Flames on turn three, well, just lost him multiple games.
Yeah, he had no answer to it.
Oddly enough, the times that it was not cast on turn three, which happened once in his one match in the top eight, he won. Hey!
Well, the games that I saw him lose, so he recovered from the first one, and then there was a second one. Well,
yeah, that is one thing about the deck, is that it can flood the board again relatively quickly, but if there's a second sweeper, now his hand's empty and he's sort of screwed. Smuggler's Copter helps with that a little bit, but again, that's more for card quality than it is for card amount.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, I mean, it was good enough to make him the top seed and get him there, and that's insane.
Well... What's insane is not just him, but is what Ben Hull, who is the other losing semifinalist, managed to pull off. Not only was this his first Pro Tour Chewy, but he, in his top eight profile, said, I don't know, I didn't test standard.
Oh, you're talking about Ben Hull. Yeah, Ben Hull is a Canadian who is primarily a limited player.
Yep.
And the way he tested, quote-unquote, for standard was by watching Chris Van Meter videos about this Red-White Vehicles deck. So he learned how to play from watching a master play and absorbing what he said.
And drafting with randoms.
Yeah.
Literally a quote from his profile, drafted with a few randoms. So yeah. There's nothing interesting in the deck. It's the same, literally the 75 that CVM used to win the SCG Open. Yep. But just to look at his path to the semifinals.
Oh my god. Okay, wait. Before we get there. So let's run through the deck quickly. It's got two Gideons. It's got your Thraven Inspector, your Toolcraft Exemplar, Selfless Spirit, which is a thing that I think Matsukas was missing.
Yeah.
The Veteran Motorist, which is borderline insane. Dapala Pilot Exemplar, still pretty insane. PNLR, Deck and Stone, Harness Lightning, Smuggler's Copter, Fleet Wheel Cruiser, Sky Sovereign, Console Flagship. So yeah, like Chris said, it's the deck that CVM won the was it the GP or the Open? It was an Open. There was no GP.
Correct.
Yeah.
Road Rage.
Just the Road Rage deck, yes. Not the Simpsons game.
Chewy, I need to ask a question. Do any of these vehicles have air horns on them?
Well, if Sky Sovereign doesn't, then it needs to. That needs a foghorn, I think. Like, when you drop Sky Sovereign, you should be like...
I imagine it sounds like a whale.
I mean, it looks kind of like a whale, so...
I'm imagining you can just hear a giant space orca happening.
Yeah. So, to make Chris happy, I'm pretty sure that the Fleet Wheel Cruiser goes, air, whenever it hits the board. But especially if there's a Veteran Motorist in it, because damn.
No, if there's a Veteran Motorist in it, it just goes, get off of my lawn! Because he's old.
That's why Clues likes red-white.
There were a lot of jumps there.
Well, and yet it still made sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Ben Hull was also, because I was told by, I think, was it Kim that tweeted this at me? We had to talk about his shirt.
It was Kim. It was Kim who tweeted this at us.
Yeah, because he's wearing an XKCD shirt. Which one of these was, what's it called?
Stand back. I'm going to try science.
Yeah.
Yeah, he also, so to get to the point where he lost, he had to beat a 5-time Pro Tour Top 8er in Li Shitian.
Yeah.
Then he had to beat.
And he won 3-1, by the way.
He had to beat a Pro Tour finalist in Pierre Dagen.
Which he won 3-0, and it didn't even look hard.
And then he came up against Carlos Romão.
Shota
Yasuoka.
So he lost to the guy that went on to win, who's a, you know, Hall of Famer, et cetera, et cetera.
And if he had beaten Shota, he would have had to go through a former world champion who's coming off the back of winning 2 straight GPs.
Yeah.
So he would have earned it.
Yeah. But I think taking 4th place at his first Pro Tour is probably all right.
The career earnings thing on his profile that they have on the side of the screen during the top 8, career earnings, $250, which he has now multiplied by 60.
That's a good return on investment, right?
61, I mean, actually, because he's now got 15,250 career earnings.
So yeah, that seems good.
Not a bad weekend in Hawaii for free.
Probably not. So let's move on then to a deck that I really wanted to see work, but sadly, it just didn't seem to do anything against Ben Hull. Pierre Dagen of France was playing the Blue-Red Spells deck, which runs primarily, the big draw was Dynavolt Tower.
So, interestingly enough, he mentioned off-camera, I don't think he ever said it on camera, that he thinks Dynavolt Tower in the main deck is a mistake and it should be Nibbles of Frost.
It should because be what?
Every time he casts Nibbles of Frost, he won.
Well, I mean, the Nibbles of Frost is borderline insane in a deck with, let's see, 24 and 7.
Oh, God, that is filthy.
Yep.
There you go.
Clues, what's that do?
Nibbles of Frost, for those who don't know, it is a rare creature spirit that costs 2 blue-blue for a total of 4 mana for a 3/3 with flying and prowess.
I'd play that card.
Yeah, that's sick.
But wait,
there's more.
Yeah, whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, tap target creature an opponent controls. That creature doesn't untap during its controller's next untap step.
I think the word that we're looking for is sick.
Wow.
It's like
especially, again, in a deck that's running 24 and 7... which is 31, since no one bothered to finish that math for me, spells. It's running over half of the deck is spells, and Nibbles Frost just shoots out Frost Breath. It's like, ha, 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 ha.
While getting bigger and punching you in the face.
In the air!
Yeah.
That does sound better than Bendable Tower.
It says cast, which means when you drop your one Torrential Gear Hulk and do a thing, it does it again! Yeah. Buh. Yeah. So the rest of the deck, it's running Galvanic Bombardment, although only three in the main, which is interesting. And Take Inventory, which is the... What's that card that this is a fixed version of?
Accumulated Knowledge.
There we go, that's the one. He's also running Tormenting Voice for more of the card draw. Anticipate, Glimmer of Genius, more of the card draw. And then, let's see, Harness Lightning, Fiery Temper, Lightning Axe, Void Shatter. You know, and the one Gear Hulk, let's not forget. And the Wandering Fumaroles, you know, which should be a given in a blue-red deck. And then the Dynavolt Tower in the main, and in case you're going, wait, which one was that again? It costs three. When you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you get two energy, and you can tap it and pay five energy to bolt a creature or player. So three damage.
So that's good, right?
I mean, it seems good. Again, the deck is 31 spells, which means chances are the Dynavolt Tower is going to kill... I'm going to go low here and say three things over the course of the game.
So I've actually had two Dynavolt Towers in play at once.
See, now, that just seems borderline ridiculous. Like, at one point during one of his matches, the judge had to go find another die. Because he had a D12, and then he put, like, a 6 next to it, and then another 6. And they kept having to go off and find D12s for him, so that the camera could see it and not be confusing. At one point he had, I think it was 31 energy, is the highest number I remember them saying out loud. But he might have cast more spells after that.
That's a big Harness Lightning.
Yeah. Harness Lightning, my Boris Reckoner. Got you.
Not my stuff at all.
Wrong format. Oh, focus.
Damn it. We did it again, Squeak.
But,
Yeah. This deck is a lot of fun to watch. It's a lot of fun to play. It's not so much fun to be on the other side of the board from it.
Unless you are Ben Hull and you just run this deck over in three games.
It is like, not a blocking deck.
Like, it wasn't even fun to watch.
Yeah.
Like, I sort of spaced out during this game because other than watching his little energy counter dice roll up, it wasn't doing anything. He's like, okay, I'll Tormenting Voice, discarding a Fiery Temper to kill your Smuggler's Copter. He's like, all right, here's another one. I'm going to hit you next turn. Like, it's... Plus, yeah, he kept having the Dipala and the Veteran Motorist for Smuggler's Copter so that Dynavolt Tower actually couldn't kill it, which was pretty big. Because it pumped, both of those pump vehicles, don't you know?
I seem to remember hearing something about that.
Yeah. So again, he made it to the top eight, so the deck must work, but it was just miserable to watch because it wasn't working.
Yeah. The next guy down, and this is my favorite archetype in the top eight, Matt Ness with Team at Aetherworks, which was the breakout deck of the weekend, if Torrential Gearhulk was the breakout card.
Yeah, there were 55 Team at Aetherworks decks, which is almost 19% of the field in day two.
Good God.
Yep.
And mind you, that's day two. In day one, it was there were 82 at still 17.6% of the field.
55 out of 82 of them made it to day two?
Yeah.
Seems pretty good.
Yeah, seems all right. And yeah, Matt Nass, this is his first Pro Tour Top 8, but he's been around a lot forever and ever. Right? This was his first top eight, right? Yeah.
Yes, it was. Yeah. So this deck wins by accumulating a bunch of energy, then on turn four, casting Aetherworks Marvel, activating it, and casting either Ulamog or Emrakul.
And there you go.
In theory.
Yeah, in theory. So let's see. What do we have here? So we've got four Ulamog and four Emrakul, because if you're trying to find them out of the top six cards of your library, you need as many as possible.
Yep.
Aetherworks Marvel, by the way, let's remind people, it costs four. When a permanent you control goes to the graveyard, you get an energy counter, but whatever. And then you tap it and pay, is that six? That is six energy. You look at the top six cards, and you can cast one from among them without paying its mana cost.
You put a lot of emphasis on that word, Chewie. Is it relevant?
I think it might be, because Ulamog and Emrakul both have triggers that are cast triggers.
Yeah.
And that's
because they're really good, and you don't want someone to cheat them out.
Oh, wait. He was serious. Yeah. He's also got Glint Ness Crane, which, well, I mean, it's a utility creature. It just digs out an artifact from the top four of your library, which means it's either finding your Aetherworks or it's getting other cards out of the way so you can find your Aetherworks. Because you look at the top four, you can reveal an artifact and put it in your hand, and the rest go on the bottom.
Yep, similar to why Contingency Plan is in this deck.
Yes. Which looks at the top five. You put any number of them in
top
the graveyard.
Top five cards!
Of the library. And the rest go... So you put any in the graveyard and the rest go on top.
Which is interesting, because the last time Channel 5 all showed up with a combo deck, it was the Jeskai Ascendancy deck, and they were playing Tygam Scheming, which did the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. They're all about their weird combo enabler cards. And then it's running Glassblower's Puzzle Knot, Woodweaver's Puzzle Knot, Vessel of Nascency, and Aether Meltdown to either dig or gain energy or both.
So the big problem with this deck is that you often end up with a metric buck ton. buck, as in a dollar. Buck
as in a ton. Dollar. A yes. Dollar's worth of energy.
No, a buck ton, so a dollar ton worth of energy.
Oh, right, yeah.
And we're talking beer, right?
And nothing on which to spend it. Which is, I don't understand why this deck doesn't run like an Architect of the Untamed or a Dynavolt Tower or something else that lets you spend all that energy, because Aetherworks Marvel is going to get counted.
Because it's the pure combo deck. Like, it's doing nothing other than the combo. Like, there's no backup. There is no contingency plan, contrary to what the card says. Like, even in the board...
Well, this version has none.
Well, yeah, the one Matt Nass is running. Even in the board, there's nothing else. It's just counter spells and card draw.
Yeah. There are some versions where playing things like Long Tusk Cub. I saw one with Aether Torch Renegade, which you can tap and pay, I think, 8 energy to deal 6 damage.
That's pretty neat.
Well, people are going to side out their removal, because what are they going to do, kill a Glint Ness Crane?
Hey, man. It'll peck you to death in 20 turns.
Well, so?
10 if you get 2 of them out.
Oh, man. Just half that clock.
Combo.
Yeah.
That's why they call it a combo deck.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, I mean, there's really not much else to say. That's what the deck does, and if it doesn't do that, then it loses. Oddly enough, it did it more often than not, because he made it to the top 8.
He did also
keep in mind that when you're hitting, if you could actually just use like a contingency plan, and you see the card that you want, you just leave it there with enough left so that it'll be in the top 6. Like, cool. You don't see it, well, you're 5 deep, and then you're going to go 6 more. You're going to hit one of them. Like, it's pretty consistent as far as something that's allegedly random. Like, it does its job.
Yeah, really, the problem is finding the Aetherworks Marvel and finding the energy to use it as soon as possible. Like, mm-hmm. And, like, this was a card everyone looked at as far as all the testing teams and whatnot, because obviously you can go turn 4 Emrakul, oh my god, it's possible. But the question is always, can it do it consistently enough to be a deck that can do well at the Pro Tour? And clearly the answer was yes. And again, the reason that Matt Nass didn't really do much in the top 8 is because he was playing against the quarterfinal in front of him, no matter who won, he was playing against decks that had counterspells. So they're going to just counter the Marvel. Or they're going to counter the big dude late in the game when you go to play it.
Womp womp.
Yeah.
There was one point where Matt Nass hardcast an Emrakul, took control of his opponent's turn, looked at their hand, looked at their board, and conceded while still controlling his opponent's turn.
Yeah.
But Li Shi Tian, with his Mardu vehicles, made one of the sweetest plays I saw all weekend.
Which one was that?
So this deck, it's called Modern Vehicles, but it does play Cultivator's Caravan, because that card is a lot better than people are remembering. Three drop, mana rock, crew three to make it a 5/5. It's really sweet. So he taps out to cast a Cultivator's Caravan. His opponent then tries to go end of turn, Kozilek's Return. And Li Shitian taps his fresh Cultivator's Caravan to cast a Ceremonious Rejection.
Wah, wah.
No blue mana showing. His opponent had no way of knowing it was coming. It's just like, nope, get wrecked.
Turns out it's not just a 5/5 that hits you in the face. It's also a Bird of Paradise.
That's a good mode to have.
So yeah, Li Shitian ended up in 7th with the Mardu Vehicles deck. It's almost the same as the Red-White Vehicles deck, but it's running 4 Scrap Heap Scrounger and 2 Unlicensed Disintegration and the Cultivator's Caravan because it's awesome.
Yeah. Scrap Heap Scrounger is brutal. You can attack for a lot of damage on turn 3.
Ow. Yeah, you can. And it's there for the long games to just be attrition. You just keep bringing it back, and they keep having to deal with it until they can't anymore. And then you kill them. So, yeah, this one was... It was neat to watch. I think the consensus from the commentators was that the Mardu Vehicles deck is not quite as well-positioned as the straight red-white one.
In the matchup between the two of them, it definitely isn't. The Mardu deck has a game against the mid-range decks and the decks that have ways to blow up the field because of the counter spells. And Unlicensed Disintegration is really good against, you know, creatures that you can't kill with a Harness Lightning.
Like Torrential Gearhulks?
Sure.
Hmm.
I like the deck a lot.
Yeah. And then finally, in 8th place, Joey Manor was playing White-Blue Flash, or Blue-White Spirits, or I saw another name for it. It's got several.
White-Blue Midrange is what some of the other decks were called that were basically playing the same list. Like if you look at the 27-point list, there's 4 of them, all within a few cards of each other. Some are called Midrange, some are called Flash. And the ones that are called Midrange, in some cases, have more instant speed spells than the ones that are called Flash. So, I'm not in charge of naming decks, but that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, probably, because they would just be a bunch of penis jokes if you were in charge.
Hey now, some of them would be about Harambe.
See? Joey Manor was playing, so it's got 4 Gideons, and 3 Abin Inspector, and Selfless Spirit, and Reflector Mage. Remember that card?
I don't think I'm allowed to forget.
Trying not to.
Archangel Avison and Spell Queller and Rattle Chains.
Q-U-E-L-L-E-R.
And very, very good. You can... Jeez. One Declaration in Stone, 3 Stasis Snare, and of course Smuggler's Copter, because... So, Smuggler's Copter is...
Magic the Gathering deck.
Smuggler's Copter is really good in decks that want to hit hard and fast... And continue digging through their deck to find the cards that hit hardest and fastest, right? It's also really good in decks that want to draw lots of cards so that they have the best answer at any given time.
And decks that want to fill up their graveyard.
And it's really good, that was my next point, in decks that want to throw things in their graveyard for later use. Those are 3 completely different decks that Smuggler's Copter works in case you're like, well, there were, what, how many in the top 8 were there?
16.
16 Smuggler's Copter's in the top 8, so clearly there's one deck that's just too good. No.
No, it's actually half as good as it was last week.
Well, so, I mean, last week was...
Well, week before last.
Week before. I mean, that was the first week of Standard, though, so where the format was solved.
And now it's solved again. Play Blue-White Flash. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
So that was the topic. He's also running Westvale Abbey, which is hilarious.
And is really good in this deck, because it makes 1/1s, which can crew a Smuggler's Copter.
And that's why it's hilarious. Was it in... It's not in any of the others, because they were running more different colors. Yeah.
I'm entertained by the idea of Westvale Abbey driving something. It never will, but it's funny.
Well, it's more the clerics that come out of the Abbey to drive a copter. which I'm fairly certain is against their vows. I'm just saying.
I think it's a little fuzzy on the subject of copters.
Well, the smuggling part is probably the problem.
Yeah.
They just don't use it for smuggling. They just hit people. It's fine.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, clearly violence is allowed, so.
Obviously. I mean, they're still human.
It looks like the Spaniards broke the format. Because Luis Salvato and Alvaro Sanchez Lopez, who I believe are Spanish, but they could be from a Latin American country where they speak Spanish. They played the blue-white mid-range deck, and they both went 9-1, which is pretty good. So,
oh, yeah, I was going to say the mid-range versions are playing, but no, this one says mid-range and is very close to Joey Manor's deck, so, yeah, whatever. Again, we're not in charge of naming the decks. Like, Luis Salvato's deck looks more mid-range because it's got, you know, Thalia and Gisela in it, so that it's a little slower.
Mm-hmm.
But then Steve Hato's deck does not have those things. So whatever, I guess they just jotted down whatever it was called.
They're just waiting for me to tweet about it. It's fine.
That's probably it, yeah. So let's see. Running through some of the other high finishing decks, or decks that got lots of points in Standard because it's a Pro Tour.
Brandon Ayer's Black Red Madness is the first one we haven't discussed yet.
Well, I was actually looking at the one right above it. Matthew Anderson's Jeskai Control deck is running Nahiri, Chandra Flamecaller, and Lynn Vala all in the main.
Oh, I didn't look at it because it was just Jeskai Control, so I figured it was similar to Romano's deck, but no, it's quite different.
And two copies of Confirmed Suspicions, which is 5-mana counterspell.
Investigate.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty funny.
It's pretty funny if you cast Torrential Gearhulk and flash it back.
That would, yeah.
So many Dr. Sciences.
It's also running Authority of the Consoles. Ooh.
Yeah.
Sick. Yeah, Black Red Madness that Brandon Ayers is running is, it seems like we talked about a similar deck. It's got lots of things that go to the graveyard and then jump out.
It's only actually running eight cards that have madness, two spells, basically.
Yeah, Fire Temper and what's the other one?
Eldarin Pariah.
Right, there it is.
I would love to see a Westvale Abbey in this deck somewhere. I think it could easily support, the mana could easily support it. And I'd also like to see Olivia immobilized for war in here.
Hmm.
Just because with creatures coming into the battlefield all the time, you can discard cards to pump them. And it puts a counter on it. It's not just a temporary buff. So even if you don't end up using the haste because you're bringing it back in main phase or whatever, in their second main, you could still get value out of it.
Hmm. Let's see. Now, here's a Jeskai Control deck that's running Dynavolt Tower.
Is this Arno Bagland?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, here we go. Here's a different deck. The Black-Green Delirium deck, which was the second most prevalent deck in Day 2, with 30 copies, just over 10% of the field. It's running Liliana, of course, Murder, Grapple with the Past, Grasp of Darkness, the Vessel of Nascency, Traverse the Ulvenwald, you know, all the things that you've come to expect. And then main deck Filigree Familiar.
Foxy. Yep.
Kalitas, Ishkana, Emrakul, Grimflayer, nice, Tireless Tracker, there's the Gearhulk, the green one, Mind Rack Demon, you remember that card? And just the
I'm
ones
racking
that
my mind to... about it, and I don't remember it.
Well, that's probably better that way, to be honest.
You're delirious, don't worry about it.
That was a team effort, I enjoyed that.
That was good.
None of us is as bad as all of us.
Depending on how you parse that, yes.
We are less than the sum of our parts.
There's a Bant mid-range deck here that is... Seems like we talked about something very similar to this week one.
Yeah. Todd Stevens, I think, played something similar to this. It's
okay.
Bant Company without the company.
Yeah.
Although this is more like the green-white Brad Nelson... Tom Ross, Todd Anderson deck that they played at the SCG Open, in that the only blue card is nowhere? How is this banned?
Wait a minute, it was, wait, Hang on.
No. Nope. Not that one either.
Oh, smugglers. Wait, no.
Nope. Mm-mm.
There's not even any blue in the mana base.
Yep.
I mean, there's Aether Hub, but there's no blue.
Nope.
I don't see it on any abilities. Oh, wait. Is there something that requires number of,
Nope.
Colors?
Nope. No radiant. No, converge, nothing.
No. Okay, just so Bant mid-range is actually green-white mid-range.
Flat out, yeah. Not Bant.
Yeah, because if it was actually Bant, Tamiya would be there.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
And Reflector Mage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Eric Froelich is playing a more different black-green Delirium deck with Catacomb Sifter, Gnarlwood Dryad, and, like, lots of Kalitas and Servant of the Conduit and Vergerous. That's how you say that. I looked it up. And Blossoming Defense. Buh.
Yeah, this is a different version of the deck. Interesting that he went with Servant of the Conduit instead of Deathcap Cultivator.
Hmm.
Because he's not doing anything else with the energy here, right?
Not that I see, but I haven't learned what all the energy cards are.
Yeah, it just seems like Cultivator. I mean, it doesn't tap for green, I guess, but it does get Death Touch later on. I don't know. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Omnix is hiding in the board. That's cute.
He's like, oh yeah, I've been relegated. There's a blue-white control deck running Spellqueller, Archangel Avacyn, and Torrential Gearhulk, and then all of your removal and card draw and counter spells. Here's a different Grixis control deck that's running Dynavolt Tower. Red-green energy.
Yeah, I want to talk about this archetype.
So it's got Chandra, because she's pretty good. For energy, let's see, we've got Harness Lightning, Voltaic Brawler, Servant of the Conduit, Long Tusk Cub, Bristling Hydra, Lathnu Hellion, Attune with Aether. This looks like something, was it Reed Duke was playing?
No, Reed was on Red White Vehicles.
No, not for this tournament, for a previous one.
I don't remember seeing him playing.
Maybe it wasn't.
There was a deck that did very well that's not listed in the 24 to 27 pointers. That was basically this, but it had four copies of Electrostatic Pummeler along with a whole bunch of pump spells. So Electrostatic Pummeler, when it enters the battlefield, gives you three energy, and you can pay three energy to double its power and toughness. And it's basically a combo deck. You hit it with like a larger than life or a built to smash, and then you double its power, and then you cast Uncaged Fury and give it double strike.
Yeah, Kelvin Chu is playing. It's a teamer energy deck in the 21 to 23 points. I'm looking at that. That's pretty funny. It's got the built to smash, the Blossoming Defense, the Uncaged Fury, and the Pummeler.
Yeah.
Let's see. There are more. Hang on. Let me.
I tried to buy some Electrostatic Pummelers this weekend, and they were sold out at four times what they were selling for the day before the Pro Tour.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Tends to happen.
Here's our red-green version. That's got, yeah, there's the larger than life. Okay. Here's another red-green version and another red-green version. Okay, so yeah, there are four in the 21 to 23 point lists.
Including one by Michael Good, brother of level 3 judge from Canada and good friend of mine, John Good, whose middle name, in fact, begins with B, so he is, in fact, Johnny B. Good. I'm not even joking.
I know, that's why I sighed, is because you're dead serious, and that's sigh-worthy.
I'm pretty sure Clues has met him and can back me up on this.
Yeah, I believe I have, and I believe that is, in fact, not a lie.
Yeah, Bill was right. None of us is as bad as... All of us is as bad as... I forgot how you said it already. We suck.
Hey, Clues.
Huh?
Lie check.
I'm not qualified for that.
That's fair.
Here's a black-red aggro deck that's running that Bomat Courier again that and Key to the City that Lansdale found so not great a couple weeks ago.
Did I?
Yeah, you didn't like the Bomat Courier.
Oh, yeah, I'm not a fan of Bomat Courier. I think it's really risky. I thought you were talking about Key to the City, but...
The key's cool.
Key's fine.
Let's see, another Team or Aetherworks deck. Tamaharu Saito is running four color vehicles. What's the other color?
I think he's basically on something similar to Li Shitian, but maybe with a slightly heavier blue splash. I don't remember.
Oh, there's Ceremonious Rejection in the board. That's all I see.
Okay. So, yeah, he's basically running the same list as Li Shitian, but two different people named it.
Gotcha.
Okay, can we just diverge from decklist a moment to talk about how butt-ugly that trophy is? It's like, okay, we have this cool little colloidal base. Okay, we have the Planeswalker symbol. Why did they let a kindergarten kid model Play-Doh over the top of it?
Because they were out of macaroni. I got hungry.
I mean, I'm not alone here in thinking that that orange curve thing just looks terrible, right?
I mean, it's not the best.
Most of the internet was having fun making fun of it, too.
You know, I seem to remember I saw a different picture of it, and it looked kind of cool, but in this picture, it does not look great.
The Planeswalker symbol is fine. I have no problem with that.
It reminds me of Nickelodeon.
Except that it's not even. It just looks like it looks literally like a child made it.
And I'm just looking at it, and I'm thinking, like, this is the thing that you win on Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
I mean, it's practically a blimp in terms of the color of orange. I'm sure the foil is better, but it doesn't look very good right now.
I mean, it's clearly a mythic.
Wah, wah. Maybe that's what they were going for.
I don't mind the color. Jeez. I don't know. Anyway.
It might also just photograph poorly. For all we know, in real life, it doesn't look like a Cheeto exploded.
So, getting away from deck lists and just looking at decks, there were, like we said, 55 Team or Aetherworks deck that made it to day two, 30 of the Black-Green Delirium decks, 23 Black-Red Aggro decks, and 20 Red-White Vehicles decks. Well, I guess I'll keep going. 19 of the Red-Green Energy decks, 15 Black-Red Madness, 11 Jeskai Control, and from there we get down into the single digits.
Single digits.
Didgeridoo.
You dig it?
Single didgeridoo. No, they were not summoning minotaurs. I'm almost certain.
They should have.
We haven't seen any minotaurs since Theros block. It's so sad.
It is kind of sad. I mean, I have, but not in Magic.
No,
I play other games. Like, where have I seen minotaurs? Oh, in Guild of Dungeoneering. Anyway. So yeah, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10... 9 more decks that had 5 or more show up in the top 8 in day 2.
That'd be impressive.
It would.
That's some tiebreaker system.
6, 7, 8, 9 more that had 3 or 4 show up, and then a whole lot more 2s and 1s make day 2. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's a pretty diverse metagame. Like, anytime the top deck is under 20%, I'm interested.
And it's a combo deck, which is so freaking weird.
Well, not only is it a combo deck, but it's a very beatable combo deck.
Yeah. So let's see. If we go by archetype here it is. So there are 104 aggro decks, 63 Aetherworks decks, because there were a few other variations, 38... Delirium decks, 29 mid-range, 24 control, and then things get weird. There were 19 emerge decks, 10 colossus decks, which is bizarre enough to get its own category, and 6 decks labeled as spells.
Yeah, Dynavolt Tower, Stormer Alchemist type thing.
Yeah. So the colossus is a thing. I see 1 Jeskai, 2 Grixis, scroll, and 7 Teemer colossus decks. In day 2. This is the, what's it called, the Metalwork Colossus?
Yep.
Yeah.
What exactly is going on there?
So you're playing normally Hedron Archive and Cultivator's Caravan to make Metalwork Colossus cost practically nothing, and then you're casting it for practically nothing.
And it's big.
And it's a 10-10 that gets big. Well, that comes out cheap, rather. It's a 10-10 that comes out cheap, and it can jump back from graveyard to hand by sacking 2 artifacts. But, like, it doesn't do anything. It's just big.
Yeah, but, I mean, a 10-10 on turn 4 is pretty good.
It crews vehicles real good.
It does do that.
In fact, also, it can crew them all.
It also blocks pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Like I was talking with the salesman who plays Magic, and he's like, "I just wish people would quit with the Colossus." I was like, "I don't know what you're talking about." And he rattled off, you know, what it did. And he's like, "It's just big. It doesn't do anything." I was like, "Yeah, but it comes back." He's like, "Shut up, Chewie." I was like, "I don't know, man."
I mean, it turns sideways and hits, right?
I mean, yeah, but everything stops it cold. Like, it doesn't have any sort of trample. Were there any spells in these decks that gave trample?
I don't know, but I did see some people playing Engulf the Shore with it.
I don't know what that is.
And bounce all creatures with toughness less than or equal to the number of islands you control.
Holy crap.
Which,
you know, that's pretty funny.
If you have a 10-10, probably not going to be able to bounce it.
Probably not, yeah. I don't know. I guess, I mean, again, what did I just say? There were 10 that made day 2 of the various versions of the Colossus deck, so clearly it's not bad. I didn't get to see any because, like I said, I only watched the top 8, and I don't know anything about the decks.
At least you watched Magic.
I try to always watch the Pro Tour top 8s whenever possible because it's the highest level of Magic play. Yeah. Oh, well. So that's a look at the Pro Tour. All kinds of decks to think about. Lots of people will be playing the Aetherworks deck, so pack your counterspells or, you know, win before turn 4, I guess.
Both good strategies.
Yeah.
Luce prefers you win first.
Beware of people trying to play these control decks slowly when it's your next few FNMs.
I'm going to need you to make a play.
Exactly. What's the next GP?
Providence on Friday.
That only sort of answers the question. So Providence, Warsaw, and Santiago. No, Warsaw and Santiago are the next week. So Providence and Kuala Lumpur, which are both standard,
yep,
and are both this weekend.
And I will be in Providence. Come up and say hi.
Yeah, watch out for that Lansdell there. He's the one that looks like Lansdell.
I'll be the big black dude.
Because there's only the one.
Normally. B.A. Brorakis.
Nice. And I bet Clues didn't even watch that video. And it's funny on its own.
It is pretty entertaining.
And it is pretty entertaining.
Chewie and I make a pretty good team.
Yeah, while he was here, we played some Broforce on my YouTube channel. You should check
I distinctly recall you guys getting disappointed when you were Braid and you didn't have a gun anymore.
And then I destroyed the helicopter with him.
That was respectable.
That was pretty awesome. Without taking a hit.
That was a dumb helicopter.
So there was also an Eternal Extravaganza this weekend that Chris put in the show notes.
Yeah, it was a pretty big event, so I figured it might be worth talking about. The Legacy results, unfortunately, I could not find the full list of results at time of recording. However, I do know that it was won by Sam Raukas, who is a Star City Games grinder playing Miracles.
Stop the top.
Contained Clues' favorite card of all time. And he defeated a gentleman on Grixis Delver, complete with Zombiefish.
Zombiefish.
In the finals. Because Zombiefish.
Damn right.
Yeah.
So what tournament was this? The Eternal Extravaganza 5.
Yeah.
By what the hell is this?
So Tales of Adventure is the organizer of this, and they do satellite events throughout the Northeast at GPs and major events to qualify people or to give them buys. And it's sort of like an unofficial companion to the Eternal Weekend.
I gotcha.
So it's gaining steam. Ruben Bressler started working for Tales of Adventure and really has put a lot of power behind sort of marketing and advertising this thing. And yeah, it's been very successful. They had Legacy, Vintage, they had SCG Regionals take place at this as well, so they had Standard going on.
Nice.
It was good. So the Legacy portion was won, as I said, by the Sam Raukas gentleman. I'm just going to bring up the Vintage now, because of course I can't remember who won it.
It looks like Joe Brennan won, playing something called Jeskai JVP Mentor.
Right, so JVP being, of course, Jace Vryn's prodigy.
Of course.
Oh, okay.
And if you open up the list, it also ran a Narset Transcendent in Vintage.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. Yep,
there it is.
I guess Planeswalkers are pretty good in a format where creatures either win the game immediately or don't exist.
Also playing Dark Faden because Vintage.
Dark Faden.
I'm unsure. What is his profession?
I think he's in the copter.
He is an Onion Knight.
Oh, yeah, he's an Onion Knight. I'm sorry, I forgot. I hate you. I hate you so much.
You're welcome.
Oh, boy. Interesting.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, if you are interested at all in Vintage, then the top eight lists and the results and some metagame breakdown and whatnot are in the show notes.
The guy in
totally
second,
go check that out.
He's playing Jeskai Nahiri Control with Zohar Bagat, playing Nahiri the Harbinger in Legacy.
Did you really just say Nahiri the Harbinger?
Yeah.
I hate you so much. And Dark Faden, too.
Dragonlord Dramoka was in the third place deck. I thought Vintage didn't take any new cards.
Maybe these guys didn't get that memo.
Scab Kalan Berserker is in the Blue Moon deck that was in fourth, along with New Chandra.
Along with that is New Chandra.
Chandra Torch of Defiance in Vintage.
I mean, Scab Kalan Berserker makes sense, though.
Yes, yeah, it does, because you can cast it on turn one and then hit with it, and then your opponent's just, like, never casting anything.
Yeah, so as a reminder, when an opponent casts a non-creature spell, if Scab Clan Berserker's renowned, which means that it dealt combat damage to a player, then it deals 2 damage to that player. So when they cast a non-creature spell, they take 2. That seems pretty good in Vintage.
It really does.
UW Lansdell in 5th place had Spell Quellers in it.
Wow. That was what you called the deck, not at the Spell Quellers.
This is sweet. There's so many new cards seeing play. It's good to know that Wizards can still make cards that see play across all the formats. The one that gets me is the 8th place deck with Nick Dijon. It's a shops deck, but it's called Car Shops because it contains 1 copy of Sky Sovereign Console Flagship and 3 copies of Fleet Wheel Cruiser.
Wow. Skizzix in every format.
Well, I guess when you have Mishra's Workshop, Fleet Wheel Cruiser gets a lot better.
Okay, you know, that's... Yeah. I think you might... Yeah. I think you might be onto something there. Skizzix.
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. Did you say Mishra's Body Shop?
Yes, that's exactly what I said. Yep.
Okay, just checking.
So, Vintage, not immune to the vehicle menace.
Vroom, vroom.
Still better than Infect.
Everyone is out driving around in cars. No one is safe. Do you know where your children are? They might be out driving in cars.
It takes 2 little girls to fly a copter.
I really feel like there's a Maximum Overdrive joke in here somewhere.
There's gotta be. I just can't find it.
I just can't get there. I'm sorry. Listeners, come up with your best Maximum Overdrive joke that's applicable here and tweet it to @TheManipool.
I got nothing for you guys. My mind was entirely in Death Race 2000.
Or maybe like a Burnout 3 joke, maybe? Carmageddon? It's Carmageddon. Oh, my God.
Twisted Metal.
Was that there? That's even better.
Did you play much Carmageddon back in the day?
I have actually never played Carmageddon. No.
I played
never mind.
Metal and Roll Cage.
I forget which of the early Twisted Metals, and then I had Twisted Metal Black and played the crap out of it, even though it was apparently not great. That's the one I had, so I played it.
And then I remember that Bushido Blade existed.
That game was terrible.
It was not.
Wait. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. So, let's move on. Mark Rosewater did another Q&A thing where people asked him questions on Twitter. Ordinarily, we'd ignore these. Except our own silent partner, Will Blanks, managed to get 2 questions on here.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, sweet.
Because he was asking good questions. So the first question is, why not more elephants and monkeys?
We are the hard-hitting news team of Magic the Gathering.
Yeah. And apparently that's a response to a question about something about Kaladesh. That's the word I've been searching for, being inspired by India. But it's actually not a top-down. He answers, it's not a top-down India-inspired plane. That's just the aesthetic that they put on it after the fact. So they started with artifacts and built the steampunk thing, and then they were like, oh, we'll make it look sort of Indian. Cool.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there probably would have been more elephants and monkeys.
Most likely.
And the other, what did Will ask? How long have you been looking for a home for vehicles, and how long for energy? So, as he actually said several times, that he had the idea for energy with original Mirrodin.
Which I can believe, given the design of charge counters.
Yeah. And he said vehicles could be as far back as Weatherlight.
Ugh. They were not ready.
But it was a thing that people have been asking for, you know, mounts or vehicles and thing that they've been periodically trying to work in. He says, for instance, in Theros, Ethan Fleischer tried hard to get some boat cards made that had a vehicle feel. So,
why boats? Am I missing some flavor there? Except for crossing the River Styx.
That would be my guess. That or the Odyssey.
Oh, yeah, that sort of thing.
You know, Jason the Argonauts, all that stuff. Like, there's a big traveling adventure thing with boats. They just sort of ignored that end of the mythology instead when they kind of also didn't do the great heroes.
Yeah, they just did sort of okay heroes.
But it would have probably fit if they were doing, like, Journey into Nyx as an actual journey.
Yeah, the setting was top-down mythology, but the story wasn't.
Right.
Interesting. Anyway, but anyway.
Yeah. So, good job, Will, for getting on the mothership twice in the same article with three questions in two posts. Nice job. Gaming the system. Well done, Mr. Thoktar. He's Hairless Thoktar on Twitter, by the way.
Oh, is that who that is?
Yeah, it's the one that says Will Blanks.
Yeah, that one right there. Yeah, Will is also a judge that I finally got to meet at the last GP Charlotte.
Which could be the last GP Charlotte.
Which probably is the last GP Charlotte. And he's an interesting fellow. He poked me to make sure I was real. And we got video, a picture evidence of this, photo evidence of him poking me in the cheek to make sure I was real. It was quite nice.
I almost made a joke that would be better off in odds and ends, then.
It probably would, yeah.
Write it down or you'll forget it.
No, I won't.
Yeah, Chris doesn't work that way. So the other thing in the show notes here before we get to Modo, before we get to Magic Online, is, of course, the financial investor report thing where, as happens every quarter, Magic is up. And they are dropping more they're getting more earnings from the digital side of things, including Magic. So, yeah.
Print money.
They're also spending more on the Magic digital offering, which could mean a few things. It could mean they have to renew the license on Puzzle Quest or Magic Duels because they're developed outside the house, the third party. Or they're finally spending more money on MTGO.
I'd wager they've spent a lot of time and energy on MTGO the last few years because it's really come a long way and people aren't quite giving it credit for that.
No.
It's done a real 180 from where it was 2 years ago.
Well, people aren't giving it credit because it's come a long way, but they keep spending money and time fixing problems that are minor.
Well, they finally gave people leagues, which was something that people were asking for a very long time.
Agreed. And leagues work very well. I do not like draft leagues. But all the other leagues I'm a big fan of. But the fact that there are still so many bugs and the memory drain is still a huge thing and it's still not an easy program to stream from, these are all things that could definitely increase the eyes on the product, but instead they're spending time changing the hotkeys, which nobody asked for.
Well, someone doubt changing the hotkeys was a big time-consuming effort.
And also, I get the feeling that these would be things worked on by different teams. Like, there was a complaint. Oh, God, hang on.
The MTGO team is really small. I was re-listening to my podcast with Worth Walpit from about 2 years ago, and he said he only has about 8 people under it.
I'm fairly certain that number has gone up in 2 years with the increased amount of work that they're putting into it. Because it's only, I think it's been less than that since they really started overhauling the work on it, hasn't it?
Like, the beginning of last year was when things got really serious.
Okay, yeah. But it's a similar, I've got an example here. It's just refusing to coalesce in my head. Hearthstone, right. So, to do a brief Hearthstone metaphor, they released cosmetic things that cost real money. So alternate hero skins, which required artists and voice actors and designers to, there's a new card back for each one and that sort of thing. And they cost $10 a piece. And people were complaining, well, look, they're giving us all this cosmetic crap instead of fixing XYZ problems. So, like, the common thought was that they're diverting attention away from XYZ problems to make these cosmetic things that they charge money for that are completely irrelevant, and you don't need them to play the game. I don't have them. They're not a thing that you have to have. They're just there in case you want them, much like League of Legends or that sort of thing. And, like, the myth seemed to be, or the belief seemed to be that by having these, they were making these instead of fixing these other problems, whereas that's probably, like, well, it is. It's not probably. It's almost certainly the same with Magic Online. There's two different teams that do that. Like, I think changing the hotkeys and working on the memory drain are two completely different groups of people. Because one is very basic and top level, you know, thing you can change in the menus, for God's sake. Like, you can change the hotkeys yourself. So it's basically just switching some things to default. Whereas the other one is going deep into the code and finding the problem. Like, freaking all the browsers that I've ever used still have a memory drain. I mean, Chrome's isn't as bad as Firefox's was, but every once in a while I still have to close it.
And it appreciates that, because then it resets.
Exactly. So,
yeah, I mean, Magic Online, they've been putting a lot of emphasis on the play experience. They've been changing up a lot of the breakdown of how events are handled. Now they've recently, you know, it's changed up the prize structure, the redemption structure. They've been changing a lot of things.
Economy.
The whole thing is shifting. I mean, I'll agree that, yeah, the memory issue is a thing, but I also don't think that's going to be an easy fix thing. And I imagine it's going to be one of those things where, like, it'll get better with each release if they can. More so, like, it'll be like a subtle phasing into a better model than it's just going to be oh, by the way, we fixed it. You know, citations, good job, everybody. I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
I mean,
the biggest problem it has with streaming is that it's not a pretty interface.
I play MTGO, and I play it a lot, and I don't have a problem with it. The biggest problem is not just the interface, though, is the fact that it doesn't interact well with the streaming software. They don't recognize it as a game, for one thing.
It's not a game, it's an addiction.
There's so much going on around the outsides of the screen. It's so busy that it's really hard to find a place to do things like put a border and a picture. It's not well set up to stream from it.
Well, that's not its purpose.
No, I think I see what Chris is saying, though. Like, it's something you can factor in.
I see what he's saying, but I think rather than focus on something that's going to be a little bit of free marketing from a comparatively small number of people, as opposed to making the play experience better for the thousands and thousands of people that actually play, I think they're going to go more towards the latter. And once they get all that figured out, then they'll start worrying about making it streamable.
You see
what I'm saying?
I see what
it's a matter of priorities.
But I think you're underestimating the number of eyes you can get on a game if it looks pretty and people are streaming it.
If somebody
randomly sees it and they are watching people play it on stream and it looks good, they're more likely to try and check it out for themselves.
Ooh, I was about to lie. I was about to say, I mean, yeah, that's why I play Hearthstone, but that's actually not why I play Hearthstone. I didn't start playing Hearthstone I didn't start watching people play Hearthstone until I was already playing because my friends got me into it. So, So yeah, I mean, I think they're focusing more on the player base rather than the marketing side of it, which makes sense to me. Like, I totally see where you're coming from. It is definitely ugly. Like, it's miserable to look at as a spectator. Like, it's god awful. But, eh. I mean, what are we,
I mean, I think it's a fair point just to note that you can serve both audiences without compromising either one. It just takes a little more design aesthetic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they're finally moving away from making it work on old ass computers. Like you said last week, they recently discontinued support for what? Vista Service Pack something?
Service Pack 2, yeah. Although that's really more a matter of the underlying framework no longer supporting that. I don't think it's something they're consciously doing.
Hmm.
I mean, like, if they're running on .NET and .NET's being dropped for that, then, well, there it goes. But end result's the same. I mean, like, you can only go back so far. It's like any web designer ever will tell you that you don't bother designing for older Internet Explorer because otherwise your website looks like it was made 10 years ago.
Right.
Like, you just don't. You don't bother unless you absolutely have to.
Yeah, but they do still want it to be able to run on a potato.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's Aperture Science way.
But no, seriously, they want as many people to be able to play it as possible, so it can't be too pretty and look too good, or else it's already got so much going on behind the scenes that if you try to make it pretty, it's just going to and die.
Well, it's like when you get an absolutely amazing game on your computer, but unfortunately they had to dumb it down for a console.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Bad console ports are sad.
They are. So that was a fun tangent.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, take that, magic in your success.
Yeah, screw you, buddy. So, speaking of Magic Online, we should talk about Magic Online now.
Yeah, not going to be too much to talk about. So, first up, just as a reminder, Magic Online updates come out on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. We record on Monday, so most of my news is a week old. If you really want to keep in touch with this stuff, you should probably go to the Wizards website, go to products, Magic Online at the top, and you can see the most current stuff. The main things that I have to point out for this week are, first of all, Pro Tour just finished, so the Pro Tour Gauntlet's going to happen this Wednesday. I don't have a link for it because for some reason they didn't make their obligatory post online yet, or if they did, I missed it, but after every Pro Tour for about a week, you can play with the top 8 decks or the best performing decks without having to buy them through an online thing. You can look up old Pro Tour Gauntlets. By now, you should probably know the routine if you do it. So that'll be going through if you want to have a chance to play with all those things without having to actually go out and get all the cards yourself. That's cool. Likewise, if you recall a little bit ago, they announced the You Make the Cube contest, and now we're up to the voting part. So you can click on the link in the show notes and check out the different available cube options, pick the ones you like, and I think the end result is going to be a chance to actually play with the cube that they go with. So that's neat. You help them outsource that creativity. And past that, there's really not much else going on. The new set came out a week and a half ago, so they're chill for a bit.
When it comes to the cube, vote for Timothée Simoneaux.
Would you like to make a pitch for that?
His is the only cube that is actually creative and interesting. Klug is probably going to win because he's Eric Klug and everybody knows who he is. But he didn't actually put any creativity except in the original concept of the cube. All he does is take cards from Pro Tour winning decks and put them in a cube.
Yep. Oh, I guess that's fair. I'll tell you what the four ones that they have on here are. So one of them is Guillaume Maintenon's Jenny / Johnny cube. So crazy drafting for combo nonsense. One of them is Eric Klug's Pro Tour cube, which, as mentioned, is full of Pro Tour stuff. Simoneaux Timothée's Twisted Color Pie, which is weird. So this one you actually have to explain a little bit. What he wants to achieve with the design is to offer an original way to enjoy the five colors, new cube feeling by getting away from what makes all cubes similar, the color pie. So players love unusual strategies, you know, mono blue aggro and the like. And so this is a cube that's built around that. What if you wanted to go with the weird, unusual things like your Izzet deck? What are you going to do in red blue? Pingers. That's different. These are things that they do. What about Boros? What do you think about when you think of Boros, Clues?
I think punching things.
Well, you get Boros control.
What?
Yeah.
That seems good.
When, but that No.
Yeah. All right. What do you think about when you think of Rakdos?
Think about punching things fast.
Punching ramp. Things with an empty hand.
You get ramp.
Wait, what? No.
Yeah. Welcome to the Planar Chaos Cube, which is what I am calling it right now. But it looks neat. And then finally, there's Joseph Velocci's Common Uncommon Cube, which is when you're probably more likely to be able to actually assemble in real life if you enjoy it. So these are the four ones that they've got up. There are links to all of the lists here, or at least the main concepts of them. Yeah, like you can expand the boxes to see their actual list. So if you like playing Magic Online, you should go check these out and then vote.
This Planar Chaos Cube, as you're calling it, is really like someone giving you cookies that have chocolate chips that they have needlessly put raisins in as well. It's like you're getting a chocolate chip cookie, but it's got raisins in it.
Wait, I like raisins.
Yeah, but you're wrong.
I also like raisins.
I had raisins and craisins last night.
Here's the thing. I like raisins too. They just don't belong in my cookies.
But oatmeal raisin cookies are delicious.
No, because they could be oatmeal chocolate chip, and that is a vastly superior cookie.
You are just plain incorrect, sir.
Oh, no. Look out. It's starting to look like the current political structure. So, you are wrong.
Wrong.
Wow.
Wrong.
All right. What else we got, Bill?
No, that's really most of it, because the Year of Modern is on hold until the 26th, when we'll go back to Innistrad, and everything else is just like, hey guys, look, new set came out, enjoy, and have fun with your treasure boxes and all the other nonsense. It's actually a very light Magic Online news week.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, then. Treasure boxes.
Well, go win them.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, he's a judge. He can't win. What the hell?
Well, you get the treasure boxes the other way, then.
What's the other way?
Violence and coercion.
Wow. But Chris is a big old teddy bear.
That's true.
It's true.
He's not even the most criminal of judges I know.
Zing.
Haven't had one of those in a while.
Oh, I talked to Preliman a couple days ago.
I'm sorry.
You used his one phone call?
I was going to say, yeah. How well could you hear him through the glass? I mean, does the little...
Well, there was the little phone thing. It's fine.
Right. Okay.
Anyway, he made me take my shirt off. It was weird. Anyway, so let's wrap this up then, gentlemen.
Oh, that was a terrible mental picture in my head. Go on. Yes, let's wrap up.
Yeah, it was.
Did you rub your nipples on the glass?
That's exactly what I was going for.
We were all picturing it, and I'm just really entertained that some people have no idea what you're referencing, and it's even funnier.
And I'm okay with that.
Don't Google that. Because I don't know what terms you'd put in, but don't do it.
Okay, well, Clues is laughing uncontrollably. Bill, go.
All right. As you can tell, I've got a bit of a cold, so I can only go so far with my one toughness. You can follow me on Twitter as SqueeGoblinAbob. There's no I in Goblin because it was the first thing to fall. Very sad. You can also find me in person in the coming week when I will be less sick. If you attend Cosplay America in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, it'll be going on this weekend, October 21 to 23. I'll be there. It'll be a lot of fun. You don't have to be a cosplayer to enjoy it, but we're going to be doing crazy stuff. We're making swords, taking pictures. We're going to have people doing like professional level zombie makeup. It'll be great. So check that out if you can.
Neat.
Yeah.
That does sound neat.
And if you want to know more, go to cosplayamerica.com.
It is on the internet.
Boing. Like Bill was supposed to smile and the shine on his teeth, but he didn't, so I just made the sound.
Yeah, I mean, it helps. Yeah. Fix it in post. We'll be talking about that, too.
So, Clues, what you got?
Hey, if you want to hear more from me, and I can't imagine why, but if you do, you can find me on the Random Discard Podcast right here on the MTGcast Network. I've got an episode that should have gone up last week, but I just never had time to edit it. It should go up this week, I swear. We recorded it. Complete with background buzz from Skype. Thank you, Skype, for all of your background noise. It makes our lives so much easier. You're such a good product. I'm so glad that Microsoft bought you and made you better.
For a certain value of better.
For a very specific...
Remember, everyone, you can, in fact, add negatives.
Yes. Yes, you can. If you'd like to reach me directly, you can do that via Twitters. I am @LockLuzet, spelled just like it is in the show notes.
Yeah, it is. He is. They is.
They is.
They be.
We are.
What it do?
One of us. One of us.
What it do?
So, so how about you, Senor Lansdell?
You should all be pre-ordering slash getting excited about Civilization VI, which comes out on Friday.
Unless you're not into that genre at all.
Well, in that case, I don't know what's wrong with you. You probably,
I mean, if I'm losing my current civilization, I guess I should start looking for better.
Well, you are.
You can find me each and every week on CodConfidants.com with Tapping Out, featuring myself and the former voice of Star City Games, Mr. Ken Crocker. He sometimes wears a bow tie while we podcast and nothing else. You can also find my articles each and every week on StarCityGames.com, normally on Wednesdays on the free side. I write about brews. Some of them are good. Most of them are not. And occasionally I will write about broader topics, like how to become inspired and such things. Should you be at GP Providence, you can come find me. I'll be the big black dude in the black clothes. I am always happy to talk to listeners slash readers slash people who just think I'm an idiot. The last category tends to be the most populous.
That's why he talks to us.
Yay!
I really have this mental image now of some guy, some like big black guy who goes to all these events and people walk up to them and think he's Lansdell and he just goes with it. And there's this entire separate life of Lansdell that Lansdell doesn't know about.
I actually had a listener bring me an iced tea once. It was an Arizona iced tea. And she brings it up. She's like, here, I know you love these. Hi, who are you? But thank you for my iced tea. I did not get to sign her thigh.
What? No, don't clarify. Keep going. Stay on target. Stay on target.
You're too close. And nothing else. Yay, Magic the Gathering. It's a great store. You should check it out.
Or something. All right, then. Well, that just leaves me.
Top five, Manipool.
Top five, Chewy. I am, in fact, the top five, Chewy. So, let's see here. If you want to follow me on Twitter, that is at the Manipool. If you want to send me an email, send it to Chewy, that's C-H-E-W-I-E, at mtgcast.com. And if you want to check out my other stuff that I do, which would be videos, then you should go to youtube.com/C/TheManipool. Since the last time we recorded Monday Night Magic, I've had a second Rocket League Rumble video go up. Rocket League is soccer cars. It's rocket-powered soccer cars. But the Rumble adds Mario Kart-style weapons and items, and it's hilarious and a bit rage-inducing. So I played three more games with Billy from It Might Be Gaming and with Jacob, and we had a good old time. The third video of the totally accurate battle simulator pre-alpha that myself and my friend Molly are playing went up. And it's a lot of fun. We determined the power of the shield men, who not only can stop arrows, but can also decapitate the enemy with their shields, it turns out. There was the next Hearthstone Tavern Brawl video went up. And what went public just as we started recording is the first of my creepy games for the creepy Halloween season here in North America. It's a game called Dark Echo, where you're in the dark, and the only thing you see on screen, it's a very minimalistic game, but it's incredibly tense. The only thing you see on the screen is a set of footprints showing you where you are, and when you walk, it creates a visual representation of an echo. And it bounces off walls and whatnot and fades away.
So you're like some kind of Daredevil Batman type thing? Like as an actual bat, not Batman, sorry.
Okay, yeah, there you go. I say if you were Daredevil, you'd just be able to see everything.
Right.
So, but yeah, you're essentially walking around with echolocation.
A man who is bat.
Yes. And bad things are red. So when there's an enemy of some sort coming towards you, you just see this angry looking red swirl of sound that moves towards you and you hear it. And it's actually terrifying. And it's really cool because the game is entirely based on sound, the sound design in it is amazing. Like you'll just be walking along, you know, clomping along and all of a sudden you'll take another step and the sound will have changed. But you don't see anything that changed because you're just looking at sounds. As weird as that sounds. But it's really cool. Like, at one point, there were little graphical representations of flies buzzing along. And then when you walk past where all the flies are, it changes from clomp, clomp, clomp to squish, squish. And what I said to the camera was, oh, I just walked across dead bodies, didn't I? It's not cool. And it really, it's strange. For a game that's literally just lines on a screen and two pair of footprints, it really sucks you in, and it's really quite tense. And I really enjoyed it. I've got one video up now, and another one will be going up very soon. Because I recorded two at once, because, you know, the camera hadn't died yet. So I highly recommend you check that out. And yes, very soon, hopefully tomorrow night, I will be recording some Five Nights at Freddy's 4. Which I'm
for
still
what?
Not looking forward to. No, number 4. Number 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Are you doing this because it's Halloween time and also because now there's a fifth one?
Yes, both of those reasons. And because I really need to man up and just play it. So I'm not afraid. Okay. Let me get this out there. The reason I haven't played this game yet, I'm not afraid to play the game. Like, jump scares don't bother me. Whatever. It's fun. You know, the thing will jump out, and I'll scream and swear and whatever. And that's fine. But the problem is, the way my brain processes, like, horror things, is it won't even think about them at all until I'm in the bed trying to sleep. And then it'll be like,
hey, you remember this really creepy thing that you saw in that movie or game or whatever? Here it is, but five times worse.
And because my brain is a douchebag.
He's not wrong.
Yeah. And that sort of thing will cause the lizard part of my brain to, like, oh no, is something about to get me? Whereas the intelligent part of my brain is going, well, you guys shut up so we can sleep, but it doesn't work. And then whenever I turn off my computer monitor, roughly 2 hours later, it will emit this pop. That is very loud, and my monitor's here, my bed's right there, it's in the same room. And even though I know it's the computer monitor, it still is very loud, and it's in my room, and I'm trying to go to sleep, and it's dark. And so it always makes me, like, sit up and go, what was that? And when all of that's already running through my head, it causes the lizard part of my brain to, like, panic. So, basically, this is a very long way to say, I'm a wuss, but not when it comes to actually playing the game. It's dealing with all of the imagery that it's going to put in my head.
So what you're saying is that for this to really work, we need you to actually, you know, do record yourself playing the games, but we also need to have a best of feature of you waking up scared out of your mind in the middle of the night.
No. Once I'm asleep, I'm good.
Okay.
Like, there's no, like, night terrors or any of that crap. Once I'm asleep, I'm good. It's just that the stupid lizard part of my brain refuses to let the rest of the brain go to sleep. And it's terrible. And that just happens sometimes. So that's why it's been a year since I didn't finish Five Nights at Freddy's number 3, and I haven't played 4 yet.
That's even more frustrating than scary.
Well, 3 was, but, like, 4 takes place in a bedroom with a closet and a door, and outside the door is a hallway, and that's exactly how my room is set up. There's another door on the other side in the game, but whatever. So, like, that's not gonna help. And of course I have this big cardboard stand-up Chewbacca right here, who, like, while I'm rolled over facing the wall, part of my brain, this happened a couple nights ago, part of my brain is gonna be like,
he will eat your soul.
No, part of my brain will go, I bet if I turn around, then that cardboard Chewbacca's standing right next to my bed. And the intelligent part of my brain goes, no, he's not, he's still in the corner, it's freaking cardboard and he's getting old and falling apart anyway. But then the other part of my brain goes, don't turn around. Don't turn around. And I'm like, ugh. So now I have to, like, roll over and look over here to see that he's still standing here. And the other part of my brain goes, did he move? And I'm like, shut up. Like, it's terrible. And it's all in my head. I'm not, like, afraid something's going to get me. It's that my brain won't shut up. And it's, ugh. But I'm going to fight through that just to play the scary game for you guys. Not you guys, because you two don't care. But I mean all of the other people.
I watch your videos.
Oh, I appreciate that.
You make videos?
You should totally watch Dark Echo, dude. It's so cool.
I am tolerating political ads to watch your videos. Just want you to know that.
Yeah, I have to do that, too. I'm sorry. I appreciate that. But anyway, so that's just what's going on and what's coming up on the YouTube channel. I'll be playing more Super Hot soon. I'll be playing more Rogue Legacy soon. I've got one more VVV video, I think, is all it's going to take to finish that game off completely. It's all very exciting. I'm very excited. I would have gotten at least one of those done today, but I drove for 9 hours, so that was fun. And I came home at 8, and now we're doing Monday Night Magic, and that's been the entirety of my day. So I'm going to go now. We're going to go. So a big thanks again to... Wait, was that everything? That was close enough. So a big thanks again to Chris Lansdale for joining us for the post-Pro Tour episode.
Literally anytime.
All right. How about Wednesday at 4 a.m. my time? No, your time.
Seems reasonable. I'm normally up anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So if you want, there is one more thing I forgot. If you want to help support what I do with all of the videos and the two podcasts every week and all of that good stuff, then you can feel free to check out my Patreon. It's patreon.com/themanapool, where you can sign up to throw a few bucks at me every month, once a month, to help me maintain the ability to pay bills and whatnot while I try to make the content creation thing actually work for a living. You can get all of the YouTube videos and all of the Manapool podcasts early. And if you are so inclined, you can get the odds and ends, which is all the stuff recorded before and after both Monday Night Magic and the Manapool. It's the stuff that's not the show. It's us figuring out what to do on the show, talking about nerdy things. Occasionally we get deep and personal, like the one a couple weeks ago when Chris was on after everybody else left. We got fairly deep and personal. Sometimes we just talk about inane nonsense, whatever's bothering us that day, just whatever. And it's uncensored and unfiltered, and basically the only things I ever cut out of it are like personal information. You know, hey, what's your address again? Whoops, gotta cut that out. So yeah. By the way, if you want Clues' address, just ask. I don't know who to ask, but I'm sure you could ask. I don't even have Clues' address, so don't ask me.
Top
hey Clues, can I have your
man.
Address?
No.
See, exactly.
Sorry, I was on mute there. I was laughing at something that Chris linked. We'll talk about it in a minute.
No, fair enough.
It almost made me cry. It was so good.
It sounds like that's just what you needed.
It was. I needed that link. So you've got to listen to the odds and ends for whenever this gets posted.
Exactly.
So like weeks from now.
So if you would like to help support Magic Podcasting in general, but not me specifically, that's perfectly fine. You can go to mtgcast.com, click on Support MTGcast, and sign up there for a small monthly donation. Because while MTGcast is completely free for all of you podcasters, or all of us podcasters, and it's completely free for all of you listeners, it's not actually completely free, so every little bit there also helps. And with that, I'm going to shut up now. I don't know why I went so deep on playing Five Nights at Freddy's 4. People have been asking me about it on a fairly regular basis, so I just wanted to get all that out there all at once. I apologize for it not being Magic news, but if you're still here this far into the episode, you were just going to listen to whatever nonsense we talked about. Let's be honest.
No, that's not accurate.
So if you made it all the way to the end of this episode, then I need you to tweet douchebag brain at me at the Manapool, so I'll know that you made it.
But don't tell them why.
But, well, I mean, that one I'll remember. I'm almost certain. So
do it in 3 weeks.
Yeah, then I definitely won't remember. So this has been Monday Night Magic number 533 here on the MTGcast Network. Thank you again, Chris, for showing up and staying up so incredibly late with your weird, wherever you live, time zone.
Newfoundland, and it's not that late yet.
Isn't it like 12:30?
Yeah, it's tomorrow.
Okay. See, it's 11 here, so it's 12:30 there, because Newfoundland's on that weird half-an-hour time zone thing that freaks Bill out. Bill, are you freaked out?
I don't understand. Like, we're on the same planet. How are you different?
We actually need more time zones.
You shut your face.
So, again, thank you all so very much for listening, and everyone get in the minivan.